From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's official. President Donald Trump was sworn into office, and he really wasted no time laying out his priorities. The 47th president promised big changes to immigration, trade with other countries, energy and environmental policies, as well as immediately rolled back many of former President Biden's executive actions, many of which Trump campaigned on, so it doesn't necessarily come as a shock. But these executive actions that have officially been set into motion do carry the potential to uproot how the country does business and responds to pressing issues. We're going to look at the dramatic change of administration through a California lens. In a moment, we'll be joined by the former dean of UC Davis School of Law to better understand how immigration in the state will change under President Trump. But first, we're joined by Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook, with an early look at how the Golden State is navigating a Trump presidency version 2.0. As always, welcome.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
So as I mentioned, this is version 2.0. What are the big differences that you notice between yesterday's inauguration and the first one of Trump's?
There were just the logistical differences. It was held inside the Capitol because of freezing temperatures in Washington. The first time around, you know, there were big crowds outside on the Capitol Mall. But beyond just the logistics and the optics, it was just a total avalanche of news yesterday, of announcements in the president's speech, and then also a flurry of executive orders afterward. It was unlike any presidential inauguration that I've ever seen, probably unlike any other in modern history, just in terms of the sheer amount of sweeping executive orders undoing his predecessor's agenda. So that was one big difference. And another thing that really stood out to me was the more muted response from California leaders, from Gavin Newsom all the way down to city leaders that we just saw. Leaders in California, Democrats, were a lot more more diplomatic in some of their comments about the president, or at least more muted. They were not embracing the full all-out Trump resistance sort of narrative that they did last time around 8 years ago.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, politics has just changed. I mean, it was a bruising election cycle for Democrats last year. Republicans did really well all over the country. I mean, even in California, Republicans really narrowed the margins in deep blue districts. Even if, you know, Democrats held on to a lot of seats here, the margins were a lot tighter. So I think Democrats are having a political realization that, you know, that their message did not work that well against Trump this time around. And so they're recalibrating, and a lot of them see that, you know, in their minds, they think they can be more effective focusing on some of the core economic anxieties that voters are thinking about, as opposed to, you know, embracing a Trump resistance mm-hmm. posture where they're kind of battling with him day in, day out. So I think that's a big part of it. And then another piece of it, as I wrote about in today's California Playbook, is just the fact that leaders here have a lot of problems they're dealing with at home right now. LA Mayor Karen Bass is responding to the fires. Her predecessor in the past 8 years ago was Eric Garcetti. He had on the first day of Trump's inauguration, he was all about resisting Trump 8 years ago. Karen Bass, this time around, she's focused on the fires. Gavin Newsom is focused on the fires. You have a lot of leaders across the state that just have a lot more local concerns that are taking up their day-to-day bandwidth.
Mm. Well, let's start from the state's response, really from the top of California's leaders, and that would be Governor Gavin Newsom, of course. I mean, he has been a surrogate of President Biden. He has taken an adversarial role when Trump was campaigning, kind of the antithesis of what a Trump administration would look like. However, in his statement following the inauguration, it took more of an even-keeled, amicable tone. It said in part that where our shared principles are aligned, my administration stands ready to work with the Trump-Vance administration to deliver solutions and serve the nearly 40 million Californians we jointly represent. What are those shared values that could open up Governor Newsom and President Trump working together?
Well, the clear target for the governor is disaster relief for people in Los Angeles that are dealing with the devastating, deadly series of fires. The governor's tone in the last couple of weeks really has been focused on trying to get Trump to cooperate with the state in providing more meaningful disaster relief. The state relying on the federal government to provide billions and billions of dollars to help launch Los Angeles rebuild. And so I think that's, you know, top of mind for the governor. He's really big on that. I think another potential area where they could find some common ground is tech innovation. This governor, unlike some within his own party, is very pro Silicon Valley, and he's very pro innovation when it comes to things like artificial intelligence, other forms of development in that sector. And so I think that's another area where they could probably find some alignment. But the most immediate thing really is helping the state with its disaster relief, and this governor wanting to make sure that that relief doesn't get politicized. Republicans were very quickly, Trump included, seized on the disaster to criticize California Democrats. And rather than sort of take that on in a partisan lens, this governor is hoping to kind of cool the temperature down a little bit.
President Trump is planned or expected to arrive in Los Angeles on Friday later this week. This is not his first time traveling to California following a devastating wildfire. Of course, he traveled to the North State following the Camp Fire, which with then Governor Brown and Lieutenant Governor Newsom. What can you expect from President Trump? What's being discussed in the days leading up to his arrival in Los Angeles?
So last time President Trump was here, it was a pretty cordial meeting with Governor Newsom and members of the Newsom administration. There was not a ton of heated exchanges. There was a moment where Trump talked about, you know, the state needing to do a better job of raking its forests. And there was a moment where he doubted the science around how climate change is fueling these types of disasters. So I think those were kind of the exceptions to what was a very cordial meeting the last time he came here for wildfires. So I think we're likely to see, you know, that from Trump again. I think that has been sort of his MO, is he saber rattles on these things. And then when he comes to the state, there is sort of that kind of bipartisan moment of him coming together with leaders. But also it's hard to say. I mean, Trump can be pretty unpredictable. And so it's hard to say. With Trump 2.0, his inauguration speech yesterday was very pointed, far more partisan than his inauguration speech 8 years ago. And so I think, you know, it's kind of unpredictable at this point. But yeah, I think he'll tour a lot of the disaster areas. And we know that he's close with a lot of celebrities, particularly celebrities that are conservatives or Republicans. And so I think we'll see some interesting photo ops likely of him meeting with some of those folks that have been impacted by the disaster.
Leading up to the inauguration, Democrats in the state legislature had tried to mount this defense to, quote, Trump-proof the state. You joined us about that last time. It was like a $50 million plan to mount a defense against an incoming Trump administration. It was delayed because of the wildfires in Los Angeles. Where does all of that stand now?
Well, so the legislature is moving forward with that Trump-proofing plan this week. It's a $50 million plan to create a legal defense fund to help State Attorney General Rob Bonta and other state authorities engage in litigation when the federal administration takes on California's policies. This could be things related to immigration or the state's climate policies, reproductive rights, just a whole swath of laws. So that is moving forward. That is going through the budget committees in the legislature this week, and it's likely to go up for final votes next week. So that's very much still in the works. But again, like you alluded to, the fires in Los Angeles had pushed that all back. Legislators really wanted to get that done before Trump took office, and the fires just really upended all of that. And their special session where this Trump-proofing the legal defense fund is being considered, it's been expanded to a much broader special session where they're taking on $2.5 billion at least in relief for the victims of the wildfires. So the message, as much as they are still talking about Trump-proofing, it's become a lot broader just given the reality of the state situation.
When talking about that $50 million of funding, a good chunk of it would have gone to California's top prosecutor, Attorney General Rob Bonta. On the immigration front, Trump really went for it yesterday during the inauguration with executive actions and what he wants to do with immigration and undocumented immigrants. California has a large population of immigrants and undocumented immigrants. How are California Democrats planning to protect these residents?
Well, right out of the gate, State Attorney General Rob Bonta announced a lawsuit this morning challenging Trump's executive order to repeal birthright citizenship. This is the right of people born in this country to be born as American citizens, regardless of where their parents are from. Bonta's lawsuit really takes that head on, and he's arguing that this is a well-protected right under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. And so I think the state is, you know, it didn't take very long for the state to need that legal defense fund that legislators are creating. And Bonta, this is really an area he's always been an advocate for immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants. And this is an area where I think Bonta's leaning into that part of his agenda and leaning into his identity as a national leader for Democrats on immigration issues, someone who has his own, you know, family immigrant background story. And he's, you know, he brings that experience to the legal work that he does. And so I think we're likely to see Bonta be the figurehead of this, not just for California, but across the country. You know, he's leading cities and other states and taking on these legal battles. So I think birthright citizenship is the first big legal fight where we're going to see this, but there's a lot more to come. Trump has announced that he intends to follow through on his promise of mass deportations, including deportations targeting big cities. We've got, you know, a lot of major population centers in California that are likely to be on that list. And so I think Bonta and others, particularly district attorneys and city attorneys around the state, are likely gearing up to fight Trump's efforts to draft local police departments to assist with those deportation efforts.
Finally, when talking about California's response to an incoming Trump presidency or now Trump presidency, I mean, largely it's focused on Democrats, right? Because it's a supermajority in the state. But of course, there are Republicans in California. What are California Republican leaders saying in the 24 hours since the inauguration?
There was a whole contingent of Republicans from the legislature and from the state who were at the Capitol yesterday for Trump's inauguration and then the balls and the festivities. I was looking at all the selfies and things they were posting on Twitter. And they're really relishing this moment, the Republican leaders in the state assembly and Senate. They haven't had this type of, you know, political wind at their backs for a long time. They gained a couple of seats in the legislature this past year, not nearly enough to crack the super majority that Democrats have, but they are feeling themselves in a different level in a way they haven't for a long time. But the other side of that is, you know, we haven't seen them respond to a lot of the controversial things Trump is doing. You know, when it comes to things like pardoning rioters who attacked the Capitol on January 6th, including people who attacked police officers. Now they're also going to have to answer questions about that and whether they support some of the president's actions there. So I think it could be a little bit of a double-edged sword for some of the Republicans in the state.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. As always, thanks for joining us, Dustin.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, a day after the inauguration, we are talking about a Trump presidency through a California lens. I now want to bring in Kevin Johnson, the former dean of UC Davis School of Law, who is a professor of Chicanx Studies. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me here.
So your focus, and you've been on Insight before, it focuses on immigration law, civil rights, and the U.S.-Mexico border. Big picture. President Trump's executive actions on immigration aren't necessarily a surprise, of course, but what struck you about the tone of President Trump's first hours in office?
I think the number of executive orders, and there's at least nine that relate directly to immigration, the tone is surprisingly similar to the tone that President-elect Trump used when he was campaigning and was elected president. It tended to be pretty tough, pretty committed to immigration enforcement, and very clear in what his desires are. And I think the desires, at least in the first day's executive orders, are to indicate that this administration is going to be as tough as nails on immigration enforcement, and in some ways spread shock and awe throughout the, you know, the American public that he is actually going to do something on immigration. Whether some of these things or all of them will work, we'll have to wait and see. But I was taken by the aggressiveness in tone that was very similar to the campaign and somewhat different than what lawyers see in legal documents.
When listening to the executive orders, I thought about you know, there's a balance of power, of course, right? You have the Constitution, you have Congress, you have the Supreme Court, and of course, you have the president. What is the extent of or the limits of an executive order?
Well, the executive order, high priority policies for the administration. An executive order can't overrule an act of Congress. It can't overrule the Constitution, but it can sort of indicate budgetary priorities, policy priorities, and instruct the government that these are priorities and we should follow them. You were talking a few minutes ago about birthright citizenship, and that's an important one. And in my view, the effort through executive order to eliminate birthright citizenship is just a clear violation of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So that's why it's already been challenged in two separate lawsuits, one by the ACLU, the Asian Law Caucus, and other groups yesterday, and today by California as well as other states. And I'm pretty confident that an injunction will be issued in the short term so that birthright citizenship, while the lawsuit is pending, it is allowed to continue. And I envision this these cases ending up in the United States Supreme Court. And I rarely make predictions of what the Supreme Court will do, but I think the law is so clear that it's very likely that the Roberts Court is going to uphold birthright citizenship. So it strikes me in thinking about that, it's not news to President Trump or his advisors. In some ways, the executive order is a political statement. It's a statement loud and clear. I'm against birthright citizenship, and I'm going to challenge it. And if he ends up losing in the Supreme Court, as he has in the past, he will say, the Supreme Court stopped me from delivering on my promise to you. It's not my fault.
He also promised mass deportations in the country. In light of these executive orders, what could that look like?
Well, I think that's an incredibly good question, but the various executive orders do a number of things. Declare a national emergency along the border, which brings federal funds to the border for border enforcement. It also instructs the Department of Defense to come up with a plan for sealing the border and stopping the invasion from south of the border. It also instructs states that you know they should join up and assist in federal immigration enforcement. The executive orders also bring back the Remain in Mexico policy that would require asylum seekers who come to the border, want to apply for asylum, to apply and then wait in Mexico while their claims are being adjudicated. And that was ended by the Biden administration, is going to be brought back by the Trump administration. I think all the signs are that undocumented immigration is a problem. It is an invasion in the eyes of President Trump, and it has to be stopped. Border wall construction will continue. Resources will continue. Detention facilities need to be built to house the non-citizens who are subject to removal. And I think that we can see a series of policies sort of emanating from the executive orders, like raids in public places that immigrants are thought to frequent, and possibly like the raids that we saw last week in Kern County in the Bakersfield area that caught people off guard, but were at places like Home Depot. In the previous Trump administration, there were raids at 7-Eleven and Walmarts, and that caused a great deal of concern in the immigrant community. And the other thing that the Trump administration did the first time around, we could see a return of it, was immigration and customs enforcement operations at state courthouses where immigrants go to take care of their business, whether it's paying a traffic ticket or getting a marriage license. And ICE was arresting people or questioning people at the courthouses. And the Chief Justice of California at the time, Tani Cantil Sakyue, sent a letter to the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security and to the Attorney General saying, you've been interfering with our state judicial operations. Please don't conduct ICE operations at courthouses because it scares the heck, she didn't use that language, but scares the heck out of the immigrant community. They won't do their judicial business. And that's not good for anybody.
You're talking about federal resources, but of course, there's the state and local jurisdictions as well. Many of which, I mean, California has sanctuary laws. Some cities have sanctuary laws as well, which is prohibiting the use of state and local resources to assist with this federal response to deportations. Would those laws hold up?
No, I think California does have a series of laws that limit state and local involvement with federal immigration enforcement. And those are within the power of the state and can't be disturbed by the federal government. In fact, the California sanctuary law was upheld in the face of a federal legal challenge and found to be a constitutional law, not preempted by federal law. So I think in California, we may see raids, but we're unlikely by the federal immigration authorities, but we're not likely to see any state and local involvement. In other states, it'll be different. I think in Florida, in Texas, and in Arizona, there may be a much greater coordination and cooperation between state and local law enforcement and federal immigration enforcement. Those states have different laws, different voters, and different priorities. And I think that what President Trump will do, and it makes a lot of sense, is encourage states that want to assist in federal immigration enforcement to do so, put some pressure on states that are not so keen on assisting. And there even have been rumors that President Trump might try to condition federal disaster monies on cooperation with federal immigration enforcement. I don't have any independent knowledge of that, but it's the kind of negotiations that you could see taking place between the federal and the state government. And perhaps one of the reasons why some state leaders, including Governor Newsom, now are focusing on disaster relief, not necessarily on differences with the president.
I also think about DACA. What could this mean for the residents who fall under DACA, who came here as children but currently have protections?
Yeah. And DACA has two components. One is that you can stay here as long as you are law-abiding. And two, you get work authorization. And those are very important to young folks, and everybody, really. But President Trump has voiced his opposition to and at one time tried to rescind DACA and get rid of it in its entirety. And he also stopped taking new DACA applications after the Supreme Court upheld DACA from his efforts to end it. So DACA has become a smaller program because there are no new applications. And I think there's every chance that DACA could be eliminated. At the same time, President Trump has said that maybe something could be worked out in Congress where Democrats and Republicans work together to benefit this relatively small group of DACA recipients who don't have legal status in this country. And I think that that's something Democrats could support. And I think it's something that if it has President Trump's support, maybe there could be enough Republicans who join the effort to protect DACA recipients. They're a very vulnerable group and very, very worried right now.
Yeah. We only have 30 seconds left, but I'm curious, in terms of immigration, has there ever been a time like this in U.S. history?
Not in a very long time. No modern American president has taken the steps on immigration that President Trump has taken. No modern American president has talked about immigrants in the tone and way that President Trump has talked about immigrants. We'd have to go back to perhaps 1954, an Operation Wetback that was conducted by the Eisenhower administration to even get some kind of idea of the kind of policies that are being put in place now. But we haven't seen this in more than half a century.
Professor Johnson, as always, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Kevin Johnson is the former dean of UC Davis School of Law, who is still a professor of Chicanx Studies. You are listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.